Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. As always, I'm your host Neil Shilath, and I'm delighted to say I've been joined by Varun Vasudevan. How are you, Varun? As we were discussing, I think you really enjoyed last night's game.
Yes, I mean, as an Indian, staying up till 4 a.m. to watch what we witnessed. What we witnessed, please no one ever say anything to Asian or, you know, anywhere across the continent fans who stay up all night to watch that, you know, with the goodness of their heart. So yeah, I mean, kudos to myself, credit to all the Asian fans, and I will not say anything else about that.
Okay, well, I have good news for you. We won't be talking about that today because, well, the title is a competition that you guys haven't seen for a while. Anyway, we've also got Alex Barker. How are you, Alex?
Hello, my brain's working really hard to try and find a way to work the number 85 into a sentence, but I'm struggling.
Yeah, that's difficult, yeah. We'll get it somewhere in the broadcast, hopefully. Yeah. But anyway, if you listened to last week's episode, the three of us debated and discussed who we thought might win the Premier League title between Manchester City, Liverpool and Arsenal, and we enjoyed it. So we hope you enjoyed it, but even if you didn't, we don't care. Because we're going to do the same thing for the Champions League this time. We've picked three top favorites that each of us will be sort of going a bit in-depth into to sort of analyze and basically discuss why we think they can win the title. But we'll also quickly go over the other five quarterfinalists and assess their chances. So once again, we will have our debates and discussions. And this time, guys, we're going to have 10 minutes for our sort of favorite team. So I'll be timing us again. Let us jump straight into it with Varun and Manchester City. A real betrayal, I think, over here. Let's begin, Varun.
I mean, a betrayal in many senses. It's really funny that last week I was arguing against Manchester City for the Premier League title. And today I'm going to be arguing for Manchester City for the Champions League title. And it's actually not funny, the more I think about it, because...
Sorry, you did a Frank Lampard there.
Yeah, I actually did. I had a big smile and then I went serious. I actually did.
We can take the time off. Lovely stuff, man. We can take the time off, but I had to say it.
Yeah. You got 20 seconds, well, use them wisely.
Worth it. So yeah, I mean, I actually don't think it's that funny, because my take is that Pep has been slightly drifting from being a really good league manager to being a good cup manager. Now, I do think there are manager traits that suit one thing over the other. Mainly that when you have a very sustainable, organized, repeatable kind of, you know, tactical blueprint, you are better at something like a league, which is grinding 30, 38 matches in a row with a sustainable squad-wide tactic, which everyone can come in and perform. And I think Pep was really good at that. But he probably did miss that, you know, that someone like a Carlo Ancelotti's Real Madrid is on the opposite end of the spectrum, where they can be very different on a knockout game, be very flexible, be very pragmatic, lean into player traits, lean into player strengths, give that expressive individualistic freedom that goes and wins you a knockout tie, and then, you know, probably sit back and defend the lead and see it through. So we've seen it with Zidane's Real Madrid, Carlo's Real Madrid, and Pep is a little different to that. But I think he has been moving a bit towards embracing a bit of this chaos. He has been moving a bit towards embracing that directness. You can see that with the signings of Erling Haaland and the changes he made last year in shifting to the, you know, the 3-2-5. I thought he really strengthened his rest defense. The final against Inter Milan was a very good example. They had so many long balls and City won all of them. And that's not something you could have said about, you know, a Pep team like 5 years ago, you know, where if his Barcelona team was being bludgeoned by so many long balls and crosses, they wouldn't have taken it that well. But this City team does. So I do think, yeah, he is a lot more easier to embrace the chaos. There is more dual emphasis. There is an improved rest defense. When Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland especially play, you can see there is that directness. You can go really quick and vertical with Kevin De Bruyne into Erling Haaland. And I think they're better in cups now. I think their only loss in the last 2 years has been the Carabao loss to Newcastle, and that was a bit of a fluke. They had a really good first half, but then Newcastle had a very good second half. And to be fair, they didn't have a lot of main teamers playing. Erling Haaland wasn't there. Kevin De Bruyne wasn't there. Sergio Gomez was playing in midfield. So I wouldn't really take that too seriously. And after the match, I think Pep himself said, we'll be fine if we win the treble, even if not a quadruple. I think he was half salty. But anyway, I don't think it was like number one on their list of priorities either. Usually they've been good in the last, you know, a few years when it comes to cups. And you can also see that in the statistics. They don't mind lower possession games in the cups. Last year, if I just tabulate their high possession games, obviously opposition difficulty also matters. But then even against very weak teams like Copenhagen, Dortmund, you know, those kind of teams as well, they don't mind a little bit that drop in possession. They have an increase in terms of medium passes. I say medium passes because long passes, anyway, they don't play. And it's statistically very low in number. But they have that increase in medium passes compared to short passes. They don't mind going a little vertical. They should have John Stones and Kyle Walker back. I think they'll miss them for Arsenal today. We're recording it on a Sunday before the Arsenal City game. So I think Stones and Walker won't be there for this game. But they will be there for the Champions League game. And I think in possession, they have a heavy reliance on Rodri and Stones. These are the two players who rack up most amount of progression. And I just don't mean statistically, but they're the ones who receive from the back three turn and then find the attackers in the half spaces in the dangerous zones. So I think a lot comes down to how these two progress to find your likes of Foden and Kevin De Bruyne in those half spaces. I don't think Kovacic and Nunes has really worked well for them. Whenever these players play, there is a bit of compensation required, either defensive compensation, which often is in case of Kovacic, or some passing progression compensation, which is the case when it comes to Nunes. So I do think they have issues. We discussed this. That's why I don't favor them for the league. But I think if they have their main players starting, if Foden and Kevin De Bruyne are playing and Stones and Rodri are playing, they have what it takes to get through anyone. And they really are good at finding those attacking players in spaces. Spaces which I think the likes of Real Madrid and most teams in the Champions League that are remaining will provide City. I think Arsenal's the only tricky one. They showed that in the Community Shield. Arteta has this whole, I will prevent you from getting any space. I will win all the second balls. So he has a whole irritating thing going on, which might be a little tricky for them. But overall, I think City have what it takes in possession to blow most teams out of the park. Out of possession, I think City have been weak. We discussed this in the previous episode. They can be burned in transition. And I actually did a bit more digging. If you look at their worst games in the league this year, most of their losses have come in games where they lost a lot of challenges. So I'm talking about the metric dribbles challenged, you know, where a player challenges a dribble and then loses them. And if you see their big games, the Chelsea one, which in which they conceded 4 goals, Rodri, Ruben Dias, and Phil Foden and Bernardo Silva lost a lot of challenges. The team lost 9 challenges against dribblers. Similarly, against Aston Villa, the 1-1, Bernardo Silva, Akanji, Phil Foden lost the most challenges. So, I mean, there's a very clear theme there. Either Rodri had a bad day or the people who are supporting Rodri, the second midfielder who drops in, the winger who tucks in, or the centre-back who steps up and gets beside Rodri, they lose a lot of challenges. And this is emblematic of being burned in transition, when dribblers are attacking you in transition. So I do think that is the one weakness that City have to look out for, especially when it comes to an attack like Madrid's attack. So, I mean, if they get around that, I think they should be good to see out a tie. And specifically on the Real Madrid tie, I think Madrid have lots of weaknesses. I mean, I'm sure Neil will explain more on this, but defensively,
I won't be explaining their weaknesses, man.
Then let me do the weaknesses.
But hold on, let me do that first. Then you raise your problems, no?
Okay, done. So okay, I will then stop here then.
Yeah.
I think City have enough. Summary, I think City have enough in possession. Their new attempt to go a little direct, not do too much of short passing, and just rely on the strengths of Rodri and Stones to find their star players like De Bruyne, Foden and Haaland. I think that works well for a knockout competition. They will come up with the magic. They will come up with that Haaland tap in or Kevin De Bruyne magic. And if their best players are playing and they can limit the defensive transitions issue, I think they can see these games out and win the competition.
Okay, we have a couple of minutes left. So, Alex, do you have any questions or should I ask him something?
I don't know if you're prepared. You can go for it.
Okay, yeah. So, Varun, you mentioned if they limit the defensive transitions, which is obviously if my grandmother had wheels, she would have been a bike. But the thing with City, as we discussed in the last episode as well, is that they're not doing that well. And to add to that, the point you mentioned about dribblers as well is pertinent, I think, because what I found is one area where City are particularly weak this season is their defending in transition on the wings. I think this has to do with the fact that they're essentially playing four centre-backs, not people used to sort of defending out wide, so you can get down the wings against them. Yeah. Now, if that was a problem against Aston Villa and Chelsea, who are good teams, obviously, I think that's going to be worse against some of the best teams in Europe, like Real Madrid, Arsenal, whoever they face next. Obviously, there's better wingers in the Champions League, is essentially what I'm saying. So why do you think this won't be, if this was a problem in the league, why will it not be a problem in the Champions League?
So I'll counter this. Now here we're going into the range where personnel affects tactics. And I do think that is an issue for City this year. I don't think they have the squad where everyone can do, you know, what the best players do. That is a genuine problem for City. And I think long term they have to solve it. In the summer they have to solve it. When they do have rotations or when they do have players missing out, the other players aren't that great, you know, at doing what the main people do. And I think this is where personnel plays a big difference, because if you see those games, I mean, two of those games, which I pointed out, Rodri did not start. And in the other games, Jeremy Doku lost a lot of challenges. He doesn't start anymore. Grealish lost a lot of challenges. So some of the wing defending that you're talking about, there was responsibilities for Doku and Grealish, which did not really work out. Bernardo Silva has also had one or two bad games from a defensive point of view, but then usually he's good, so hopefully that's not an issue. Kyle Walker wasn't there in one of those games, but he should be in. So I do think if I just imagine City's best 11 and the fact that Rodri Stones...
Tough.
Yeah. Anyway, I think you got my point.
Yeah, hopefully. Anyway... that's enough about City. I know you have problems with Real Madrid. So
before you touch on that, I think it's good to share with the listeners that in our doc, me and Varun for our teams have got tons of points written down, specifically for Manchester City, like loads of notes. For my team coming up, like lots of notes that match the team. And Neil, for Real Madrid, in the vibes of Real Madrid, has got no notes. He's going off the power of friendship. Just like Carlo Ancelotti.
I think episodes in a row, Neil is just going full vibes.
Full love.
Because the teams he's taking up are full vibes, I'd argue.
Exactly. So I'm going to be pretty quick. And then you guys can ask me your questions because I know you have plenty. But look, first thing I'm going to say is the number 14 is useful because Real Madrid have won the Champions League 14 times. And obviously, they've done it quite a bit in the last decade as well. So that certainly counts for something in these big games, as we've seen in recent seasons. The other thing I will say is that obviously, there's a lot of sort of a narrative around Real Madrid, especially in like around 2020, 21, 22, where they like just somehow are winning Champions League knockouts and they're just somehow winning games. But I think that's taking a lot of credit away from the players and from Carlo Ancelotti. I think Ancelotti specifically, especially, is not really given as much of his flowers as a tactician as he should be because of how much he relies on the players. But that doesn't mean he's just putting 11 people out there and be like, do your thing. He knows what he's doing. He has specific instructions as well, which maybe get lost sometimes. But I've been following Real Madrid closely this season. And I can tell you that they don't play the same in every game. In certain games, they will even play a more positional style, which maybe we don't see so much in the Champions League games, and maybe that's why we associate them with, you know, just being free-flowing, players doing whatever they want. But that's not exactly how they are always. So Ancelotti, I think, has almost perfected this balance between his sort of instructions and what he wants from the players, and obviously giving them loads of freedom. And it helps that he has such amazing and intelligent players like Luka Modric, Toni Kroos, Jude Bellingham now, who's been sensational, who can, I mean, if who can sort of deal with the tactical responsibility in a very mature way. But for example, if you look at the role of, let's say, Fede Valverde in different games, you will see that Ancelotti also has an influence on how the team is playing, whether they're trying to be more direct or if they're trying to retain possession, stuff like that. It's small things, it's small details, but they really make a difference. And Ancelotti has consistently shown that he has the nous to make these small differences and tweaks that can decide these big games. Obviously, I don't need to say that they have the player quality. We know they have Bellingham. We know they have Vinicius Jr. We know about all these midfielders. I think, you know, there's not much to be debated there. So, yeah, I think there's no reason why they can't do it again. But you guys have some reasons, I guess. So,
yes, the ace up my sleeve, actually, is that I've recently watched Real Madrid quite a lot as well. Made an in-depth little report for myself. Now, I think, unlike the last one we did where we spoke about Premier League teams, this one, I don't think there's any team here besides one that plays in yellow that I'm going to say don't have a chance of winning a Champions League. I feel Real Madrid is a solid argument. My concern would be not necessarily City, but if they were to face an Arsenal in the semi-final, because I watched them in their last tie against RB Leipzig, and I don't want to say the word pathetic, this is a bit strong, but...
It's pretty bad.
Leipzig... It was way too easy to Leipzig to just bait Real Madrid into wide areas in a really simple 4-4-2 press, limit Real Madrid's central progressions, win the ball out wide, hit the ball in the channels, go and try and create chances. And if Leipzig were able to shoot that day, then I'm not sure Real Madrid would actually be in the Champions League right now.
No,
you haven't got a rebuttal for that, I assume?
No, I totally agree with you. That was a really bad performance. Obviously, one part of that is down to players. If you're referring to the second leg, I think, or rather the first leg, that was, I believe, Aurelien Tchouameni at centre-back. So there is there was a bit of an injury crisis going on then. But still, it was a pretty poor performance. And certainly tactically as well, I think there were some mistakes made, which I think Ancelotti as well acknowledged in his post-match press conference, that he sort of took responsibility for some mistakes. I think he said something like, if I had to play this game again, I wouldn't do the same, or something like that. But basically, he seemed to recognize that. I mean, of course, that happens. But yeah, I think if your question is, can you press Real Madrid and sort of give them a lot of problems? In general, I don't think so. They have more than enough quality. And again, I think that day they were maybe trying to play out a bit too much. But obviously, they also always have the option of looking for Vinicius or whoever it is, Bellingham, Valverde, Rodrigo. And if you improve, I mean, if you don't have like Nacho at centre-back and you get, you know, someone else like Rudiger, for example, that instantly improves your build-up play quite a bit.
It does improve your build-up play, but I don't know if Ryan's going to talk this as well. It just be on me. I think, like, if they go to win the Champions League, like, it will be by facing teams that they can be the underdog against. Because from watching Real Madrid this season, their press is one of the worst I've seen in Europe. Like, it's ridiculously easy to play through, to the point that I just don't even think they should.
Yeah, I don't think they will or should press again in these Champions League games, and they generally don't do that as well.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think they're going to do it against Man City. I don't think they do it against Bayern. I think Arsenal will be the problem.
Arsenal too, you sit back. Why not?
I don't know. Vermeer, what do you think?
I mean, if you do it against City, you do the same against Arsenal pretty much.
I kind of agree with everything Alex has said. Just to add on, I do think defensively what they're trying has been very problematic. So they attempt to press more, but then that weakens their rest defense and it leaves their fullbacks and midfielders a lot to recover. And then the quality of the centre-backs is a bit of an issue. They give a lot of these back post opportunities or these half spaces opportunities. I mean, someone like Erling Haaland will make those ghost runs into the back post all day, and Kevin De Bruyne will find them, because that's exactly where Real Madrid gives space. And Carlo Ancelotti has agreed to this, and he said this at the start of the season, that this is one of our intentions. I mean, you lose space somewhere, you gain space somewhere, and we want to press. And yes, sometimes it requires us to recover, and we'll get better at it. They haven't gotten better at it. I mean, he said this in the seventh game versus Atletico Madrid when they lost. And Simeone also said that that is one of their weaknesses, and we will target it. They targeted it. They won that game. And Carlo Ancelotti said, yes, it's a weakness. We'll work on it. 6 months down the line, it still is pretty bad. And they have some player issues as well, as Neil was saying. I mean, Alaba hasn't been in good form any place. Nacho hasn't been good form. Kepa has been terrible. I mean,
Lunin is the first choice keeper at this point.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, Kepa was terrible, and since then Lunin has come in, and Lunin has had an excellent run of form. I mean, he's been very good at cross-claiming. He's been very good at shot-stopping. He's been very proactive. He's literally saved some really bad defensive performances that Madrid should have just lost. So their general organization and communication in set pieces and open play is very spooky. I mean, you have so many goals where it's just very basic communication, where a centre-back is drawn out and another one is covering, and then there's a gap. Or a full-back hasn't recovered, so the centre-back went wide, and then there's a gap. So these kind of things will be torn apart by any of the good teams. So I think defensively, I fear for Real Madrid. And I think now, I mean, there was a time, as you said, they could sit back a little and let, you know, Man City or someone keep doing tiki-taka and frustrate them. But it's not true anymore. All these teams will go direct, will go into the wide areas or the half spaces immediately if they see those gaps. So I don't think it's going to be as simple as, so we'll sit back and, you know, bore them. These teams won't allow it.
Yeah, but I do think, especially against City and Arsenal, I do think, especially when they face like a block rather than, you know, someone chasing them, they will tend to slow things down. And then with, obviously, I don't need to tell you that Real Madrid have a counter-attacking threat. So I think I agree with you in that their defense has been sort of, there's been clear weaknesses this season. And in fact, I would go as far as to say that if Real Madrid try whatever their joke of an all-out press is against like City or Arsenal, they're not winning the Champions League. I expect Ancelotti to recognize that this is still a weakness and to not do it, basically. Because yeah, if they do it, then I think they get beaten by the semi-final. But I expect that won't happen.
I can see him reaching the final. I think it does just come down to how they play.
If they reach the final, they're gonna be favorites by far, I would say. Not just because of who they're facing, but also just because of how used to they are.
I think we're kind of all in agreement on this one, where it's like, it's Real Madrid, they can do it, but they've just got obvious weaknesses that they need to ignore.
You need to mask them as much as possible. And I think I've seen over the years, I think I've seen enough to expect that they will do their best for that.
Yeah. Should we just go straight into mine then? I don't know what your timer
is. 6 seconds left, so beautifully done.
Oh, there we go.
Let's start your team, which is a very interesting one. And
have you started the timer already? Because you take the time off.
Of course not. Of course not.
Good.
Your time starts now.
Yes, I am going with Le Parisien, PSG. I believe they're going to win the Champions League. And I've said this publicly immediately as the draw has been made. So let me just get straight away what was my main fear of PSG this season, which is Luis Enrique. Obviously, he's coming, implemented a possession dominant style of football, very different to what Christophe Galtier did at PSG. And my main concern with him, especially after the World Cup, was, is this still a manager who, you know, he came to the top of European football 10 years ago. Is he still there? And in the last leg against Real Sociedad, I think he made a nice tweak that showed he is still able to compete at the top level. He moved Ousmane Dembele from the wing into quite a central role to help basically break the press against Real Sociedad. And that was a very key driver in PSG being able to build through their press. And that has been one of PSG's big weaknesses this season. Like, so furthermore, tactically, we've spoken about it on here. I think everyone has spoken about it whenever we've watched PSG. If you watched them against Newcastle, you'd have seen it. When they get put under a well-coordinated press, they crumble. They have individuals who literally cannot deal with it. Mainly Gianluigi Donnarumma, the goalkeeper. It's like the Italian De Gea. I'm sorry. He's a good shot stopper. Don't get me wrong. Very good shot stopper. On the ball, very, very big problems. But now they've got Pasquale Sosiello, who caused some problems in the first leg. Their draw is against Barcelona, then Atletico Madrid or Dortmund, and then they're in the final. I don't think any of those teams are going to give them anywhere near a problem that Newcastle Real Sociedad did in terms of pressing. As I said, last thing I need is coordinated press, but Barcelona, okay, they're second in La Liga for passes per defensive action, but even then their press has had problems this season, which we can talk about later as well. It's just some players who won't be able to press PSG with the same intensity as a Real Sociedad might, like João Félix, Robert Lewandowski, etc., if Félix plays, of course. Atletico Madrid, I think we can all agree they're not going to be really a problem. They're going to be a team who sits back and lets PSG kind of build out. And Dortmund, while historically we thought of them as a team who press very ferociously, they have a remarkably low PPDA, even by Bundesliga standards. They've got, they're allowing 12.8 passes per defensive action, which would be, I think, fairly mid-ish table for most leagues. So I don't think any of these teams are going to be able to exploit PSG's biggest weakness, which just allows PSG to exploit their own strengths, namely Kylian Mbappe, as we know, one of the best players in the world. In my opinion, I think he is by far away at the moment the best player in the world. He's got 18 non-penalty goals in the league this season, outperformed his non-penalty expected goals by nearly six. Does that year after year anyway. But counter to Neil Swartz, who in our group chat decided, when I said PSG, he thought, oh, you know, they have to win it this year because once Mbappe goes, they're not going to be able to do it. I think he's wrong because I think PSG also have a group of very good individuals who aren't quite as game-breaking as Mbappe, but are close. Ousmane Dembele, we've already mentioned. Bradley Barcola, he's injured at the moment. He should be back in time for Barcelona leg one. He's had a fantastic season. And I think in the first leg against Real Sociedad, scored a wonderful goal. Vitinha as well in midfield, as I think it's been like one of the league's best midfielders, and it's really hard to get the ball off. I think PSG have a collection of really good individuals to support the best player in the world. They've got the strongest draw, and in terms of just general team quality, and those teams aren't going to be able to exploit their biggest weakness, in my opinion. So I think it's a clear route to the final, and from there, I don't know. At that point, it's vibes, but I feel if they get to the final, they can do it.
Okay, but I mean, that's a decent argument. And to be honest, I think you actually like mentioned PSG in like the Champions League contention thing before the draw even. And at that time, I was like, what's he on about? But I have to say, I see the vision now. But still, I think the big question, though, which you have cleverly dodged, is the final. Because, like, I mean, clearly the draw is very favorable for them. But I would go as far as to say that if they face any of the other four semi-finalists in the final, which obviously they will, they are not the favorites.
So,
and they have lost a final in the past.
They have lost a final in the past.
And there's a lot of pressure on them to win.
There is a lot of pressure on them to win. I would say, so one thing, just a side point about finals is interesting. I need to re-dig this research up, but I believe nearly every like Champions League winner in modern times has like got to the final, lost, and that before they've won it. Which is a fun fact. So them losing their last final, I don't think is a big deal. Like Man City lost their final 2 years before they won it. I'd agree that if they faced Arsenal or Manchester City, even a Bayern on the top of their game, like these are teams who could like really exploit PSG's weakness and build up, right? But it is a very vibesy argument, but I kind of feel justified in saying it in that in a Champions League final, almost anything can happen, right? Like, if it's a semi-final and they're playing Arsenal or whatever, I think I'd be very worried on PSG's behalf. But in a final, I don't know. I think there is that element of unpredictability, right? It's just one game, and I feel a bit more confident in saying anything could kind of happen there.
Yeah, I mean, to be very honest, I think Alex has a good argument, and it's like just what you said, Neil. I mean, at the start of the season, I think when we were discussing group stage stuff or PSG after 2-3 months, we were like, they won't go far in the Champions. I think Alex was pretty bullish they will. And now it's pretty possible. I mean, I do see them doing well in these two legs. The thing is, I do see PSG doing well without being great. I mean, that's actually the argument. They're not going to blow away these teams, but they're going to do enough. Enrique just keeps a lot of the ball. They have a lot of retention and possession. And then when they get to the final third, they have the best player in the world and enough dynamics to sort out. And as Alex said, they have this one really big weakness on being pressed. I mean, even in the league, you can see it. All the teams that have given them trouble, like Lens, Monaco, Brest, all of them are the ones that press well, right? And those are the games where defensively PSG have been poor, even if they won, but they've defensively been poor. But that's probably not going to happen. I mean, with Atletico Madrid or Borussia Dortmund or Barcelona, I mean, whoever they face in these two games, it's probably not going to happen. Dortmund aren't really great at pressing. Atletico Madrid are trying to push it up, but they're still not the best pressing side. So I do think PSG are going to bore their way to the final. I mean, they're literally just going to bore us all, win somehow 1-0, 2-1, and do the, you know, that stuff. But I agree with Neil. I am not going to give them the final. I get what Alex is saying. It's a final. Anything can happen. Pep can have a galaxy brain moment. Or Arsenal can do the typical Arsenal crumbling under pressure thing. So all that shit can happen. I get it. But I mean, three games in a row, I don't think PSG have what it takes. I mean, it's just
to counter a little. I think rather than... just to back up your boring point, which I think is interesting, by the way, PSG have quietly been boringly dominant. The last time they lost a game was against Milan in the Champions League group stages. They've lost once in the league all season. They've been quietly just racking up wins. They're even going
good boring. I agree.
Yeah, good boring. They're in the semi-finals of the cup as well, so they seem to be on track to actually win that for the first time in a while. But when I say anything can happen in the final, like, it is, again, this is less of a very galaxy brain tactical argument, but with Kylian Mbappe, absolutely anything can happen. Like, World Cup final is a good example, but even the last thing against Real Sociedad, right, that I was re-watching the highlights yesterday. And it's a great moment for Mbappe's goal where the Real Sociedad crowd, are jumping up and down. They're doing the Poznan, I think, see what fans would call it, right? And it's like a fantastic atmosphere. And Mbappe receives the ball on a tight angle, takes one touch and belts it into the bottom corner with absolute, like, the goalkeeper stands still. Alex Ramirez had a good season but can't do anything. And life is just sucked out immediately. And everyone just stops jumping and they just go, well, that's it. Kylian Mbappe's just broke the game. So, like, I agree. I think I wouldn't go heavily against you guys for not saying PSG are the favourites. I don't think PSG are the favourites in the final against those teams. But when you have the best player in the world, I think that element of anything can happen, it is really prevalent there. Like, if anyone is going to win a Champions League final by himself, it probably is Kylian Mbappe.
No, I mean, I think it's a good argument because, I mean, if you see the ways in which teams win knockouts, they have an element of control. And then they have that one element in their attack, which is usually a really good player who can do it, you know, like Madrid and Ronaldo or Barcelona and Messi over the years. And PSG's element of control is in possession. They really control games almost to the you know, boring way. They can keep a lot of the ball and see out like 60-70% of the game without any issue in, you know, using that. And then know that, you know, at some point, because they have the ball, because they will, you know, keep prodding those gaps, they will have that moment. They will have that moment where space is created. Mbappe gets in, or he gets it on the edge of the box and he has space to dribble. Those moments will come. Those are the kind of teams that actually do well in Champions League. I mean, they're not great, but really, they're good enough.
Varun really switched sides on me, man. Nah, because the worst part is in the group, we were sort of discussing how we want to do this episode. And like, Alex obviously picked PSG first. And then I was thinking what team to pick. And like, I was quietly like, damn, PSG is a good pick. So then Alex suggested we actually do this from a like purely PSG angle, because that would be interesting. And then Varun shut that down. He was like, no, I don't like PSG. And now for 5 minutes, he's been going on about PSG.
I still don't like the fact that I think they have a good chance to reach the final and maybe even win it. I dislike it, but I can see it happening despite my disliking it. I think that's right. I basically didn't want to talk about them for 1 hour. That's why I shut that down.
fair enough. Okay. Now, those teams done. We're moving on to some of the others. I think Arsenal do deserve a bit of time. Obviously, we have talked about them. last week as well. So, Varun, how much time do you think you need? Is 3 minutes enough?
I don't think we have to be super strict. I don't think we have to be super strict here. I think we could be. It feel mean to give these teams a 2 minute limit after we gave the others a 10 minute limit.
Fair.
I can do Arsenal quickly because we've just spoken about them a lot. But you guys can probably spend time on the guys we haven't spoken about in a while.
Well, after you, sir.
Yes. Yeah, let me just get on with it. I actually feel pretty stupid backing Arsenal as my second team because I literally sound like a Prem.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm saying City and Arsenal are the top two to win it. And I absolutely hate saying that. I'm usually the guy who says it's not all Premier League, there are other leagues and all. But I genuinely feel Arsenal and City are built for knockout especially Arsenal, they're built for knockout competition at this point because they're defensively so good. I mean, I said that last week as well. And I know you guys said that their attack's not smooth and they're relying too much on set pieces, blah, blah, blah. And I think that wins you knockouts. I mean, just imagine frustrating a Real Madrid or any other team, you know, they'll meet for a whole 90 minutes or something. And then just coming up with that one set piece goal, or Trossard comes off the bench and scores, or, you know, Nketiah comes off and assists, or some crazy thing like that. And I think Arsenal are totally capable of doing that, you know, for 3 games in a row. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go all the way. I do think there is a whole, as Mourinho would say, there is a heritage thing attached. And very rarely, even if you've built your team well, in the first go do you win the Champions League. As you guys have said, you probably lose it once. You probably reach the semis or you lose the finals and then you get there. So probably, yeah, Arsenal may not win it. That's why I think I'm still a little more pro Man City as my first choice. But I wouldn't be surprised if Arteta has figured it out a little earlier than other teams did in the past. And he's just going to defend his way to the title. And other than what I spoke in the last week, they are getting Jurrien Timber back. They're getting Thomas Partey back. So they also have the depth. They can also throw in, you know, a piece or two here and there tactically when they are getting figured out, you know. So I do think they have enough about them to see through these games, even if not wonderfully dominate them.
It's a bit of a simplistic opinion, but I kind of feel like whoever doesn't win the Premier League out of City and Arsenal could very well win the Champions League.
Yeah, probably. I was thinking the same thing.
And what if Liverpool win?
Sit down.
Well, if Liverpool win the Premier League, then they won't win the Europa League.
Okay, fair. But no, I think one point though, against Arsenal, which I think could apply to City as well, and is like a plus point for both Real and especially PSG, is the league. I didn't mention this for Real Madrid, but I think it helps that they are relatively comfortable in the league. If they beat Athletic Club tonight, they'll have what, like 7-8 point lead over Barcelona. And they have a fairly easy fixture list as well. PSG are 10 points clear, run away with it. But like City,
are
also
you going to use the same point for Bayern Munich as well?
Yes, actually, I am. But Dortmund, don't you worry, but so I think I think that's the one concern, because I can't remember the last time Arsenal were like seriously competing for the Premier League and the Champions League.
Not in my lifetime, probably. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you're right. I mean, they haven't been put in this situation like in forever. So for them to suddenly win the best two competitions in Europe would be crazy. So in that sense, I agree with Alex. I think Arsenal, if they manage one, that's like success, massive success.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and if they manage like none of them, it would still be okay. It would still be okay, try again next year. And if they manage both, that would be historic. They'll build a statue of Arteta and Twitter will not shut up about it for like 5 years. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, then shall we move on to Bayern Munich? Like you alluded to, Baron, I think a big fact, or a big reason rather, why they have a decent chance, at least in the Champions League, is that they are nowhere in the league. After yesterday's loss, they are 13 points behind Bayer Leverkusen with, what, 7 games left? So, I mean, it's going
to
take...
Pichel said it, you don't have
to... Yeah, exactly. He said congratulations to Bayer Leverkusen, so I would second that message. But obviously, now one part is, you know, the fact that they can sort of focus all their efforts, whatever, to the Champions League. But also, from like a tactical perspective, Last week there was an amazing podcast on the TIFA Football podcast about Bayern Munich. It was a more general podcast about like positional play and patience, but they really focused on Bayern Munich. And the point they made was that Bayern have not at all been patient in their play in the league this season.
I think that's based off Martin's thread, which he had put out a month ago. And it was beautiful read.
It's amazing. So I mean, that was really insightful. And obviously, one big reason behind that is the pressure that Leverkusen have put them under, which has forced them to sort of, you know, try and make things happen. I think that really won't apply in the Champions League, where it's not like Bayern are against a team like, let's say, Darmstadt or Bochum or whoever, who, you know, everyone's expecting them to beat and beat quickly, score goals against quickly and get the job done, right? You're facing Arsenal, everyone accepts that it's going to be a close tie. So I think they have, they don't have that pressure of immediately needing to make things happen. And obviously it'll be a more end-to-end game. And they have the player quality, right? They have obviously Harry Kane. Jamal Musiala has been sensational this season. I mean, I've been in love with him for like two seasons, but this season he's been so consistent, despite obviously Bayern not doing so well. And then they have these wingers like your Leroy Sané, Matisse Tel if he comes off the bench, Kingsley Coman, whoever, who can sort of do damage, especially in more open games. So they have all the bits and pieces there to sort of get these results, even in a season where, on the whole, they're not doing well. So that's why I think they do have a chance. Obviously, they're on the top side of the bracket, but I think against Arsenal, they have... I mean, I wouldn't say they're like clear underdogs. They have a decent chance. So yeah, I think we can't write them off.
I mean, I kind of back that argument, and I think the elements there, I'm sorry to be a shill, but they sound quite similar to the latest TIFO football podcast with John and Martin, something, I forgot his second name, which is very good and talks about how Bayern have struggled with patience this season.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what Neil said. He was referring to the same thing.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, I think decent chance there.
Yeah, now, I'm going to come what Neil was talking about.
Yeah, I'm going to come in and say I don't see it with Bayern. I don't see why they would beat Arsenal, and by some miracle, if they do that, why they would beat Madrid or City. Obviously, tactically, there are lots of issues. I think Tuchel defensively has struggled. Even offensively, I don't think they've been great.
If you don't mind me interrupting, I think the interesting thing with Bayern is that their issues are mainly to do with like the tempo, right? The patience thing, basically. Like structurally, they've changed stuff from time to time. But I don't think there's like a massive, like clear gaping structural weakness, or even something like City, right? The fact that they can't defend wide in transition, for example, so well. I think the big thing with Bayern has been, even in the Clásico last night, we saw that, is that they're trying to play forward too fast. And then when you do that, you obviously get stretched. And that's why your rest defense gets messed up. The rest defense issue is more to do with like the tempo of play rather than the structure.
But I also want to argue against that, because why does it come in the first place? Yes, one reason is the tag of the favorites and wanting to score early and all. But I also think when they do go into settled possession mode, when they do go into long chains of passing, they do nothing with it. They're pretty bad with it. I think there is also a sense that them going vertical and quick is sometimes the only way in which they feel they can create and score. I don't think they're very creative as a team. I think a lot of their patterns are very simplistic, and very unpopular opinion, but I think adding Harry Kane has limited some of the ways in which they can play, because Harry Kane has these very set movement patterns. He's not as, like, he's flexible, he's well-rounded as a player, but then some of his movement patterns are very hard to adjust against. He will do that dropping motion. He will drop and play someone, then enter the box. He has those things. He suddenly can't have a game where he's going to be a box presence. So those are some of the limitations. And I don't... Musiala, again, wonderful player and I love him a lot. He's not that creative in open play. He's not a chance-creating machine. Like, they don't have a Kevin De Bruyne. He's not a key passing machine, yes.
But he does create with his dribbling, especially.
He does create. He does open break lines. He does open spaces. No arguments. But then you don't have that. There's no guarantee. There's no Kevin De Bruyne or Bruno Fernandes type creative machine guarantee. The wingers are not super creative. The wingers are also not the best goal scorers in the world. No one's an Mbappe or, you know, someone like that either. So I do think they're very limited in terms of the way in which they can score in the final third. And that will show up in these good games. And I think that's one of the reasons why they up the tempo, because they sometimes feel doing the same thing a little quicker, doing that drop and play in the winger or the Musiala cut and play in someone, doing that thing quicker probably, you know, takes the opponent by surprise before they can organize against it. So I don't think it's as simple as, oh, they can just calm down and the rest defense will be good and in possession will be good. I think, because I mean, even against United, for example, they had spells of settled possession where they did nothing. And that's United, mind you. I mean, who allow free passage. Fair play, man. Yeah, they allow free passage through midfield and let you explore and figure your way out. And even after that, Bayern couldn't figure their way out for like large spells of the game. So when I look at that, I don't see why a team like Arsenal, for example, who don't even provide that space in the first place, and then they're very, very happy to sit in a mid-block and frustrate you. I don't see how Bayern create against that. And then what will happen is Bayern will get frustrated, do the direct thing, do the high-tempo vertical thing. Arsenal hit back. They're really good at second balls. I can see, I don't know. I mean, at least where I'm sitting right now, I don't see how Bayern get over these issues.
No, that's it.
And last point, I also don't think they have vibes going for them, even beyond the tactics.
The vibes are also bad.
The vibes are also bad. Like, I mean, Liverpool, Real Madrid, your arguments for the vibes, they still have merit. I mean, Jurgen Klopp leaving, Liverpool always have vibes on their side. Real Madrid on a Champions League night, they always have vibes on
pure
their
vibes.
Side. Yeah, Bayern Munich this season, the vibes have been so bad. Even in the games they win, Tuchel's press conferences, all the board dynamics, him announcing he's leaving, which is not like Klopp leaving. I mean, there's a very big difference in those announcements. So the vibes around the stadium. Yeah, and then there's a whole thing on Kimmich's contract situation. I just don't think it's one of those teams which is going to turn up and play out of their skin beyond any tactical logic on a Champions League night. I don't get that vibe either.
No, that's fair. Anyway, Alex, do you want to talk about Barcelona now?
Not really. Haven't watched too much of them, but I'll give it a go. you feel free to chip in, lads. I've made that clear because I don't want to offend any Barcelona fans, but I hope I'm not offending when I say there was a reason I didn't really talk much about them when I was covering PSG. I just think they are the second least likely team in the competition to go on and win it after Borussia Dortmund, the team that plays in yellow. I mean, they're out of both. They lost the Super Cup to Real Madrid this season. They lost their other game to Real Madrid. They got knocked out of the Copa del Rey as well. They lost two games of the Champions League group stages as well. I mean, PSG did as well too, to be fair. It's not the worst thing, but they just haven't got any game breakers either. Like, Lewandowski is having a bit of an awkward season. I know there's some like behind the scenes things going on there. Barcelona insiders thinking like, his signing's not really working out. He's got 10 non-penalty goals. He's the only Barcelona player to have that in the league. I think they've also just got bigger problems that they're trying to focus on. I think they're trying to blood youngsters. I think this has very much been a transition year, and obviously Xavi's leaving. And like, I don't know, I just think there's lots of individual battles here. There's lots of individual battles within a Champions League game, or like checklist almost. And I just feel like Barcelona lose everyone. I don't think they have a proper game breaker. So, like an Mbappe, I don't really back Xavi to win a tactical battle against, like, you know, the managers remaining who are some of the best in the world. I don't know. Am I being harsh?
And Terzic.
Yeah, and Terzic. Am I missing anything? Like I said, I've not really watched much of them. I've watched a lot of Real Madrid this season, not much of Barcelona. I don't really feel much towards him here.
I'll say this. There was so many Barcelona tweets I see, and they feel very similar to Eric Ten Hag Man United tweets. And a lot of their issues are similar. I mean, they go vertical too early. Obviously, on a smaller scale, I mean, they're not that end-to-end. And they have slightly better player quality at some places, but they go vertical too early.
And they don't concede 85 touches in the box.
Yeah, they don't do that. But then they are defensively vulnerable. Their rest defense is poor. Their in-possession ideas have not been great. And as you said, they've been relying on a lot of, Yamal just turning up and being an amazing
their game leader. Breaker is a 16-year-old man. He's going to break a game and go to school the next day.
Yeah. And I would also add Pau Cubarsí. I mean, he's been so good. I mean, he's been so good. I mean, a 17-year-old. I mean, it's just really funny. All these big teams like United and Barcelona, they spend millions and millions, and then it's their teenage academy kids who are like bailing them out week after week. You know, it's just stupid. Yeah, yeah. Chelsea to United, Barcelona and all. So yeah, I mean, I think like Alex said, this is their I don't know, change in phase, transition season. They have some youngsters who can be developed, a new manager who has to come in and go like, okay, we have a young core, we have to throw a few old people out like Lewandowski, and we have to start afresh. So with that going on, I don't think they're going to beat anyone. Yeah.
Next year will be a stronger year because that's when a lot of their players like Yamal, Cubarsí, like I've heard a lot about, that's when they'll be old enough to play in the evening kickoff.
Or they would have played so much that they would have an ACL tear or something.
Yeah, it's going to be a Pedri and Gavi repeat. Yeah.
I mean, I really dislike...
Actually, even Spain are going to do it because I saw some reports that Spain are considering calling Yamal up for the Euros and the Olympics.
Oh, leave him alone.
Let the guy live, man.
Seriously, man. I mean, these guys... Mad. They've already crossed 1,200 minutes like in 6 months, and Spain and then Barcelona again, and they'll just die before they're like 21 or something. It's crazy.
I swear, it's mad. Anyway, I think that's a lot of optimism around Barcelona, but yeah, I think fair enough. I don't think anyone sees them getting past PSG. Anyway, Varun, the other Spanish team, Atletico Madrid.
I kind of agree with Alex when he said Dortmund are the least likely. And I think for second least likely, it was between Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. I think I agree with Alex that Barcelona get the second spot mainly because the vibes are terrible and it's a transition season. I think Atletico are third least likely. They're not strong as a team. I do think Simeone has sorted out a few more things compared to like Xavi. Tactically, they're a little more sorted out. They know what they're relying on. They actually have a world-class game-breaker in Antoine Griezmann. They have youngsters like Barrios and, you know, Riquelme and all those people who are coming up. So, and then the system also has a bit more contingency. You know, on some bad days, they are able to mid-block 5-3-2 their way and, you know, somehow see them through. So, it'll be tough. The main reason why I put them up there is because they're facing Borussia Dortmund. So, that is like one positive straight off the bat, right? If a quarterfinal with Borussia Dortmund, you have a chance, right? Then you get to the semi-final, and I mean, as I said, PSG could be boring, but Atletico Madrid can be equally boring. So you never know. if you have those KG nil-nils or 1-0s, they could see themselves.
I mean, I love your experts of that.
Yeah, you never know. And if they get Barcelona, then yeah, they can eat them up as well. So you can do the mental maths to somehow see them in a final. Yeah, at that point, then I go back to Alex's, anything can happen in a final thing. So that is the best case one can make for an Atletico Madrid win. Very likely, third least likely, but I wouldn't say it's zero. And I wouldn't be super surprised if they at least surprise people in one or two games here and there.
Right. And finally, the big one. Borussia Dortmund.
Thank you for your time. It's been good.
No, yeah, in the group before, we were like, we're just going to say no and move on. But like I said to you guys before we recorded, I have a hear me out for you, okay? So, obviously, I watched them last night in the Clásico against Bayern. And what occurred to me is, because Edin Terzic is not the smartest tactician in the world. I think that is well established. Ton of tactical issues in his team, both in and out of possession. The one thing he does in these big games, especially this season at least, he puts out a good block, a good 4-4-2. He lets the boys counter. And there are people who can run. Somebody can score a goal here and there. And they're on the good side of the draw. That's a big thing. I think, like you guys said, Atletico are not great. Borussia Dortmund are also not great. They're both about, if Dortmund put up a decent mid block, which they can, I think they're about equally not great. So that one can go anyway. And, you know, we did see this, to be fair, throughout the Champions League group as well, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but Dortmund were the first team to progress from the group of death, which, I mean, most people weren't even expecting them to progress. So they have proven in the Champions League this season that in these big games, because those were basically six big games, every game they managed to come up with something, mostly mid-block and then transition. I don't see why that doesn't work against Atletico. I mean, if Barcelona are there, that certainly works. Against PSG, also that can work. And then they will lose the final. But they, like Warren said, you can do some mental maths to get them to the final at least. So I don't think we should just laugh them off. Are you guys going to laugh now?
I just have one random point, probably not related to all that you said. Nuri Sahin joined in January, right?
Interesting.
And he's been the assistant manager, and he's going to be the one who's going to take over next year as the manager. Yeah. And he comes with a very good rep from Antalyaspor.
I think good times. Quite I remember well watching him.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it and I've heard about it. So, I don't know. I mean, if they have done decently well, I mean, the last 5-6 games have been wins. And assume it takes a month or two for Nuri Sahin to settle and get to know what's happening. Maybe he has an effect on things, and he is going to be the next manager. So maybe his role is also, you know, developing. Because I think that was always the idea, that Jan to May, you know, just keep growing and keep understanding the team, and then it's full time. You and Erdin Terzic moves up. So I don't know if this progression is helping, if Nuri Sahin's ideas we are starting to see them, because they have been tactically a little better in the recent games than I remember watching them at the start of the season or end of last season. So I have no idea how it works and how it's working, but wanted to throw that out.
That's a good point. Although I would say the big game thing of transition has been there, like I said, from the group as well. So I don't think there's too much new there, but I think it is working. So,
that's a much more serious point that I was going to raise, but I'll raise mine anyway.
Go on.
Neil, when were you born?
2004.
That's interesting. So since then, Dortmund have only ever got past the Champions League quarterfinals once, which in fairness is when they reached the final.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So, the club.
But every other time they've never made it past the quarters. So
yeah, but you know what though? I would say this is as good a chance as ever they're going to get because of the draw. Simply because of the draw. Because I don't think they're going to, like, suddenly in 5 years even become better than, like, City and Arsenal and PSG and Bayern, whatever.
Okay. In that case, yeah. But they're probably not going to do it.
Unrelated, there were people, after what Dortmund did, there were people saying, why couldn't you do this when, you know, it was your time?
Every other season ever.
Every other season. And then someone was like, that's because the pressure is not on them. If they were in the title race, they were losing this final for sure.
Oh, yeah, they're getting 5-0 if it was a title. Anyway, that's all for what we have to say. Last thing we're going to do is predict the whole bracket. Who wants to start?
The whole bracket? Oh my word.
I mean, just give me results. Like,
okay.
Arsenal, Bayern.
I spoke first. Okay, Arsenal, Bayern. Arsenal.
Real Madrid, City.
City.
Atletico Madrid, Dortmund.
Atletico.
PSG, Barcelona.
PSG.
What do you say? City, Arsenal, do you say? Semi-final?
Yeah. I'll go with Arsenal.
Okay. And you said PSG Atleti?
Yeah, PSG.
And then you're going to say PSG? Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Warren?
I just have one change. City make the final. I like Alex's point about one of them getting the league and one getting the Champions League. I think Arsenal get the league and City get the Champions League. And I think City will beat... probably PSG, but I won't be surprised if it's Atletico Madrid in the final.
Okay, I'm going to throw some cat among some pigeons. Bayern Munich beat Arsenal. Real Madrid beat City. PSG beat Barcelona. Borussia Dortmund beat Atleti. I'm very tempted to say Borussia Dortmund beat PSG.
But this is definition of I'm trying to be different.
That's a step. Let me finish. That's a step too far. I'm not going to go that far. But Bayern Real Madrid in the final, And then PSG Dortmund, PSG in the final, Real Madrid. That is my...
You literally heard me about a talk. I'm going to come up with something that's different than what those two say. That's exactly what you just done.
Look, but at the end of the day, Champions League is pretty random. So I think that's not horrendous.
You should have just been the one man on earth who predicted a Bayern Munich Dortmund final and Dortmund to win it. So then if it does happen, you can come back to this moment and be like, well, guys, see what I said.
Yeah, I think that's too bad though.
I'm still recovering from you saying Dortmund winning. I mean, everything else I can stomach. But Dortmund
to be honest, I think the more the more risky prediction is Bayern against Arsenal. I actually think Dortmund have a decent chance against Atleti. But we will see on the 10th of April and the 16th of April. But yeah, I think that's the episode for now. These guys are mad at me. But well, anyway, that's the episode. So thank you very much for listening. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Shailat Neel. Varun A runs the @TheDevilsDNA account. And Alex is @Euroexpert_. If you go to the @GetFootballEU account, in the bio, you will find the links to all our country and league-specific accounts. You can follow those to be updated with all that's going on in the world and especially in Europe as we approach the end of the season in all these leagues with some close title races and some Liga and Bundesligas. And also, obviously, the Champions League and Europa League and Europa Conference League knockouts, which will be very fun. You can find all that in the notes or description of this episode as well, wherever you're listening, if your app allows it. And if your app allows it, please do rate the podcast as well if you enjoyed it. And please feel free to share it on social media as well. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Alex and Varun. And we'll be back next week. Maybe with more hot takes, maybe not. But we'll see. Bye-bye.